Hello, everyone. Slewdog here, an old guy who knows shit. Continuing with season two, an old guy who knows shit explains it all for you. Welcome back, everyone. We continue season two with episode 8. So here's a plan. Copyright 2023 by L.R. Holtz. I got to start this episode by asking if you have heard or read about the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. I highly recommend a visit to their website. They just released AR6, a report which summarizes all of their findings to date, and it comes with an urgent warning that if we don't take drastic action in the next 10 years, we're going down. Down as in humanity will join the dodo and the passenger pigeon on the list of extinct species. While they don't come out and say that, I personally think they try too hard to avoid hyperbole, because you have to work through the 1.5-degree goal that they have set as the likely event horizon beyond which warming becomes runaway. Then you have to dig to find out what exactly runaway warming means. But the bottom line here, folks, is that we are in an apocalyptic struggle, and nobody is paying any attention. I mean, they're not only not paying attention, they are investing in making it worse. Climate Joe Biden will be remembered as the climate president, all right, but it will be because he will have been the last president who could have maybe steered us away from the event horizon, but instead he steered right into it. Once that event horizon is passed, folks, we are toast. If we wait till then to act, our descendants are doomed, literally. Folks, we are the characters in an apocalyptic tale, which is real. And the beginning has already been written, and it is scary bad. We are a people who in 200 years have managed to completely and utterly poison our own home. It has begun to seriously deteriorate and show signs of evicting us. Some people know, most don't want to. But it's already too late, meaning if we just keep on keeping on like we do tend to do, it's just going to get worse and worse and hotter, until sometime, maybe 4 or 5 generations down the line, maybe more, maybe as many as 10. But eventually, there will be no land left on Earth cool enough to live on. You know, folks, online DNA has us all tracing our roots back that far. I was personally proud to discover that I have a 5th grandparent who fought in the Revolutionary War, making this country possible. And now, that far ahead of us, to folks whose coastal cities are all flooded and who are moving underground in search of cooler temperatures, we will be the generation who made runaway warming inevitable. We will be the generation that could have made a difference but did not. Now, the question is that what you want? Because the IPCC report says that while we cannot stop massive change, we can still prevent our own extinction. But even just that will take drastic action over the next 10 years. Just 10 years. Folks, it is literally now or never. And nobody is paying attention. So, here's what an old guy who knows shit has to say about that. Balance. First of all, it's all about balance. Climate change is happening because we have thrown things critically out of balance. All we got to do is restore just a little bit of balance for our descendants to survive. But you know what that means, right? We got to stop using fossil fuel, and we got to stop growing, and we got to do it in the next 10 years. Now, before we get any more specific here, all right, let's review this podcast, because it has all been leading to this episode. So let's look at where we've been, and then let's see where that has taken us. So we started with an introductory discussion of our founding oxymoron, freedom with slavery. Then there are 14 stories, most of actual events one might call supernatural because they defy the laws of physics. Season 2 has its own introduction, basically time to get political and why, and then I outline a cosmology, that both accounts for all of my experiences and points to a plan of action. I discuss our place, both in the universe and in the U.S., and I give particular attention to the difference between the freedom to live, which we lack, and the freedom to make money, which we have, and which is also the primary driver of climate change. I talked about this in an earlier episode if you missed it, but in a nutshell, it is the freedom to make money off of Mother Earth that is the primary driver of climate change. A couple of episodes discussed then the power the Freedom to Make Money team has secured by cheating their judges onto the Supreme Court, which now has taken giant steps to the right, first by weakening the EPA, and then by affirming that the state has a greater interest in a child than the mother does. Steps so far to the right as to be either fascist or theocratic, the latter of which is just as likely since seven of them are Catholic. But the result is the same for the secular world, which is that we have gone beyond laying the foundation. We have actually now begun the big switch away from the populace controls the government to government controls the populace. In the last episode, 7, we saw how in the last 50 years there has been an actual conspiracy for a right-wing takeover of the government initiated by the Powell memo, a conspiracy which, with this cheated Supreme Court, has pretty much succeeded. So now we are in the midst of a free fall into runaway warming, warming which is driven by the freedom to make money, who does not recognize its existence. And now the freedom to make money team has secured its place as the most important thing and considers itself now unassailable. Well, eventually folks will see the error of this, either in time to do something about it, which is in the next 10 years, or not. Folks, money is not even a real thing. It is a made-up thing. It only has value because we all agree that that pile of bricks at Fort Knox is worth this much. It means nothing to Mother Earth. If we convert all of Mother Earth's resources into money, what will we actually have? Not a freaking thing. Balance, on the other hand, is a real thing. You can't hold it in your hands, no, but balance has actual value. Balance nurtures growth. Imbalance kills. Now that is actual value. It exists whether we are here or not. It doesn't need us to agree to it, or a pile of bricks to give it substance. For those of you who are new, I should also tell you that I speak for the Compassion, Love, and Beauty team, which is the Freedom to Live team. And we are engaging the Greed, Cruelty, and Ugliness team, which is the Freedom to Make Money team, in an epic battle for the survival of the human race. A battle we wage without violence. Our nukes are compassion and truth. And we fight for the freedom to live free for many generations to come. Okay, so here's the plan. Nobody to date is even skirting the distant fringes of the scope of what we need to do to make the necessary difference in a mere 10 years. This plan at least attempts to do that. Most of what you're about to hear I've said before, but as I discovered it and sort of all over the map, so now I'm going to try to put it all in one place and make sense of it. As far as cosmology goes, I'm not trying to convince you that I'm right or that you're wrong. I just want you to understand my language and where I'm coming from. 1. Cosmology and definitions. The stories add up to a cosmology that accounts for them and actually makes sense to me. I have to refer you to Season 2, Episode 2 for a complete description of it, but right now the important concept that we must understand has to do with the binary nature of nature and of us. Every star, as science tells us, generates energy. What science does not tell us is that the energy each star generates is divided into one of two categories, constructive or destructive. The ebb and flow of life, as well as of solar systems and galaxies, is a continuous, ongoing balancing act between these two essential energies. Constructive energy pulls matter together and forms life. Destructive energy tears it down to start over. Each must have its day for the cycle of life to work, from the tiniest insect to galaxies. They are the black and the white in the symbol of infinity. Balance between the constructive energy and the destructive energy is necessary to achieve stability. Now, the universe we see is the physical expression, the solid manifestation, if you will, of the energies underlying it. Every physical thing in the universe is the physical expression of a stream of energy created by a star. This means that there are two different states of being in the universe, one that is non-physical, these streams of energy originated by stars, and one that is physical, the physical expression of those energy streams, that is the solid physical world we are aware of inhabiting. We humans are all the physical expression of an entity of energy. And for now, I will just ask you to look into your own mind, where, in your own thoughts, you will see your physical awareness of your own non-physical self, your thoughts. No one can define a thought. No one can capture one. No one can make one outside of their own mind. No one can use science to see one in someone else's mind. A thought has and will continue to defy scientific definition in the physical world because its essence is non-physical. And we have found no scientific bridge between the two yet. Scientists can see that measurable energy is there and flowing, but that's it. They can connect brain impulses to the nervous system. They can and will continue to do marvelous things with the brain and with the body. But grasping a thought will remain elusive. And what this means is, I think, therefore, I am non-physical. We are all spiritual, non-physical beings as well as physical beings. We are all entities of constructive energy that has coalesced into a being, and our bodies are the physical expression of that being. When our non-physical beings cross over into the physical world, it is very, very powerful, but our ability to access that power from the physical world intentionally is very limited. It almost never happens. We are all, nonetheless, connected through energy streams. And those are energy streams that we either create or choose. Energy streams that are very powerful. Most importantly, energy streams that are either constructive or destructive. For example, the money-greed energy stream is one of the most powerful streams of destruction there is. Almost universal in its scope, spreading destruction worldwide. In our hearts, almost all of us are constructors, meaning that we intend for our energy to be building something constructive, something helpful to somebody somehow. Sadly, we cannot really do that without great effort. It is almost impossible to live our lives here in fossil fuel money land without destroying something somehow every single day. Turn on a light, start your car, destroy. You know, that has to stop if we're going to have any influence at all on climate change. Now, there are many fewer destructors, but they're very powerful. And by using their special ability to hoodwink well-meaning people into committing their energy to destructive streams, they have an army of destruction composed of constructors who believe they're doing good. This is the source of the polarization in our country today. A few very powerful destructors have hoodwinked an impressive army of patriots and have convinced them to work for their own destruction. Right now, destructive energy streams control almost everything. Every single thing we use, if it used fossil fuel getting to us, was destructive. It contributed to climate change. Now, if we are to combat climate change, we must first of all turn that around. We need constructive energy streams. Streams that not only do not contribute to climate change, but streams that actively counter the destruction. We need those everywhere they are not, which right now is just about everywhere. Okay, two, define a purpose. Our official purpose as a country is, and I quote, "We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution," close quote. The blessings of liberty. That is beautiful. But interestingly enough, commerce is not mentioned. Well, the unwritten but actual purpose of this country was to create an environment where money could be made, which is on the face of it perfectly reasonable, except that here, making money would justify enslavement, which in and of itself made the creation of the country about being able to make money. Now that seed has now evolved into money rules entirely. Our economy started from a simple principle: provide society's needs for a profit. And it was a constructive energy stream for a while, but as more and more money accumulated at the top, it became more and more destructive. But even then, those profits only hurt the society where they were made. But after the discovery of oil, those profits became universally destructive. They don't just destroy where they're made. Fossil fuel profits heat up everything, all at the same time. The simple principle has become a doomsday machine because it relies entirely on fossil fuel. No hyperbole here either, folks. Our economy is a doomsday machine. It needs oil and growth to succeed, both prodigious disruptors of balance. We must find a way to live without oil and without growth, in balance with Mother Earth and in balance with each other, if humanity is to survive. Now, so far, what our government has protected is the freedom to make money, not the freedom to live. That has to change. Now, the forefathers said all men are created equal, so let's enshrine that into law, huh? Let's clarify exactly what the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity means. To provide the freedom to live to all of its citizens equally. We must enshrine into law that the purpose of this country is to provide the freedom to live to everyone equally, and that one person's freedom to make money will never be more important than another person's freedom to live. We must include that that freedom to live includes personal liberty and self-determination. The blessings of liberty, for crying out loud. Subject, as always, to the limitations imposed by your freedom, which is where my freedom ends. And of course, there are always the limitations imposed by nature, which right now, I'll give you, they're pretty big, considering nature's coming to kill us all. So in that same law, we also need to enshrine the principle of balance, that this objective, to provide the freedom to live to all of its citizens equally, requires balance. Balance not only with Mother Earth, but balance within humanity, among all citizens equally. Subsequent actions will be evaluated based on their ability to contribute to the restoration of balance. Number 3. Declare the war to stop climate change. Once you establish that our purpose is to serve all citizens equally, the freedom to live, not the freedom to make money, then climate change can be given the emergency attention that it requires. And the first thing that must be established is that this is a national emergency of the utmost urgency. It is bigger than Pearl Harbor, bigger than 9/11, bigger than Putin invading Ukraine. All of those crises put together pale in comparison. Because this, folks, is nature coming to wipe out humanity. It isn't some asshole trying to take some land away from somebody, or even a bigger asshole setting out to kill a few million people. This is nature coming to wipe us all out. Everybody. Climate change is the ultimate existential threat. Do you want your grandchildren to have a chance at a decent life? Any life at all for your great-great-grandchildren? This is an apocalyptic crisis here, folks. And once the government changes its purpose from protecting wealth to protecting life, this is an emergency of immense proportions. Bigger than any war or earthquake or volcano, this is everyone, everywhere, all at once. Not a movie. Real. 4. Educate. We must get the citizenry on board. We have to freaking save humanity. Education everywhere. Media blitz. Pull out all the stops. Get the kids on board. Be a superhero and help save the world. Get the adults on board with self-sufficiency. Everybody wants that. Don't put the government in their face. Make it about the government getting out of their face. More on self-sufficiency in a minute. 5. Establish a Manhattan-style project to replace oil with something that does no harm. Have you followed the news on nuclear fusion? They sustained a reaction recently, the holy grail beyond which it was supposed to be achievable. But oops, sorry, no facilities exist to take it any further. Because we never had a Manhattan-style project to replace oil. Fusion is power that does no harm. It could be the superhero coming to the rescue at the last minute. But nope, the advance of nuclear fusion has to wait for facilities to be built. And somebody else is building it, folks. We have to have a Manhattan-style project to replace fossil fuel with something that does no harm, for our children and their descendants to have a place to live. Nationalize oil to pay for it. Number 6, outlaw profiting from fossil fuel. Nobody should be making money on fossil fuel. It is the enemy in our war to stop climate change. Folks, we are burning 20 million barrels a day. Every day. We have to take fossil fuel off of the free market. It must be nationalized. And all money made in its production and use must be used to fund the Manhattan-style project to replace it. Between now and the time we lose it entirely, the price must be controlled for supply lines. We're going to need them while we're building local business. Trucks and trains need to be making deliveries, and prices need to be stable. Fuel for the supply chain needs to stay cheap. But for us trench dwellers, sorry folks, it needs to be phased out. If we could stop all waste and unnecessary travel tomorrow, we might drop that 20 million a day by 5 million overnight, which is the kind of kickstart this thing needs. $10 a gallon would force that to happen, but that would be cruel and unjustly hurt those with less. The compassionate alternative would be rationing. Gas stays $3 a gallon, but you only get so much, which reduces each year until eventually it becomes illegal. Air travel needs also to be taken off of the free market. These are industries, folks, that are destructive. They contribute to climate change in a very big way, and they gotta go. Air travel needs to be limited to absolute need only, with a plan for phasing out all fossil fuel flight by the same time gas becomes illegal. Airplanes powered by fossil fuel are prodigious burners of oil and even more prodigious polluters of the sky. They've got to stop flying. And folks, we don't have to stop taking vacations. We just have to stop burning fossil fuel to do it. We have to force ourselves to find an alternative to getting around on fossil fuel. Now, what the fossil fuel automobile and airline industries have done in the last 50 years, all with the full knowledge that climate change was likely to happen, has to be criminal. They are responsible for killing more people than Hitler, for God's sake. How can we not hold them accountable? 7. Set a goal of each citizen and or community becoming 2 weeks self-sufficient by a given date, and then sustainably self-sufficient, capable, by a future date. If every community can stand on its own for 2 weeks without oil, coal, the supply chain, or the grid, we are a long way towards combating climate change. At the same time, we are establishing a survivability plan. This plan assumes that natural events will take down the grid and or supply lines, and that if any given community has resources on hand to survive for 2 weeks, that will get them and maybe their neighbors through crises. Every community seeks to establish self-sufficiency in energy, food, and water for at least 2 weeks, without oil or new plastic, but also always keeping in mind the ultimate goal of self-sufficiency capable. Funding priority goes to citizen and community mini-grids for power, with no funding for large-scale power projects that rely on the grid. We don't get rid of the grid, but we reduce our dependence on it to where we can do without it when we need to. 8. Redistribute the wealth. As part of our legislation that lays out our purpose and our goals, we must take control of the economy. Banking will have to be nationalized. Prices must be stable for this program to work. The Fed simply has to take control. Free markets, which rely on continuous growth, have got to end. They are as big a cause of climate change as oil is, because they must grow to succeed. We have to stabilize the value of money so that we can use it predictably. So we essentially freeze the economy where it is. And then we add a few sub-steps. After we nationalize banking, we outlaw individual ownership of corporations. All corporations are profit-shared with their employees and their investors. Balance. We freeze the markets. Values are locked in. Trading is closed. No more playing with destructive growth. Use taxes to redistribute the wealth at the top and give it directly to the citizens. Balance has to include wealth. We want the citizens to get on board with creating self-sufficiency. We must give them their share of the resources we have at hand. Nobody should be left out. The government simply sets and controls wages and prices. We might be able to return to a free market someday, but right now, the free markets are one of the big reasons we have climate change. Now, I saw recently that there is $46 trillion held by the top 1% alone. So let's just say, for example, we target $40 trillion to spread around. One way would be to impose a graduated tax on everyone who, say, has over $1 million, enough to net us that $40 trillion. Divide $40 trillion into 307 million parts, which is the total population, 337 million, minus 30 million millionaires, and you get $130,000 per person. Well, that's the money you have to start this program. My guess is you'd take 10 to 15% off the top for things like paying more to folks who live in coastal communities that have to move, more to those with less to start with, that sort of thing. But every man, woman, and child who doesn't already have $1 million gets something around $100,000. Twice that if you have to move because of the climate. This is what funds the Achieving Self-Sufficiency Plan. Now, I'm fully aware that there are a plethora of very difficult problems to solve to make this work. Stock, for instance, represents much, very complicated wealth that is not easily convertible into cash. And much wealth is countered by much debt. There is much here for economists to chew on. But if we want our descendants to have a home, we simply must figure something out. Remember, folks, money is not a real thing. It has no actual value. We invented it, and we can do whatever we want with it. And this plan, just as a side note, combined with the self-sufficiency plan, should make it possible to directly address two critical problems in this country today, poverty and homelessness. 9, get the world on board. All international relations should be focused on gathering people together to combat climate change. If we fight over who gets to run the world now, there will be no world for the victor to run, period. If we work together now, and for the next, say, 5 decades, until this free fall into runaway warming is actually leveled off and fossil fuel is a bad memory, then, well, first of all, we might find an acceptable balance and discover we can live with each other after all. But even if that doesn't happen, fighting over it then will make much more sense, because there will be a world to fight over. We must seek 50-year peace, cooperation, non-aggression treaties worldwide and honor them. Finally, 10, balance, balance, balance. We must seek to balance our existence with Mother Earth and with each other. Climate change is happening because we have thrown things critically out of balance. All we got to do is restore balance. The thing I find the saddest about all this is that our optimism about the American dream was not only a lie, it was a lie that hoodwinked an entire culture into devouring itself. The consumer society. No wonder we have a crisis in education and in our mental health all the way around. We are entities of energy that need to be doing something, and there is nothing in our culture to do. It's all entertainment and stuff, consumerism, social media, money, 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 and at its heart is nothing. Possessions, stuff, and nonsense that have nothing whatsoever to do with actual life, and the possession of which still does not represent having done anything. there's nothing to satisfy, nothing constructive. In fact, there's nothing of actual value. We make money, we spend it. That is what we do. And it is not only not constructive, it is directly and actively destructive. Well, folks, we can decide as a country, as a community, as a family, at least, we can decide to do something else. And it seems to me that standing this economy on its head and saving humanity just might qualify as something worthwhile to do. Okay, before I let you go here, I have to address the current moment. The fact is that our democracy and many of our essential freedoms are on the very verge of going away, certainly the closest they've been in a while. The conspiracy for a conservative takeover of the government that began in 1972 with the Powell memo has reached its ultimate objective, which was to make making money unassailable. Folks, these are people who do not believe in democracy. They just want to be boss. Look at the actions these people are taking and ask yourself if these are the actions of a person who wants us to be their boss, or is this someone who believes they should be our boss? It's pretty easy to tell if someone wants to support your freedom to live or if they want to exercise their own freedom to oppress, which is some kind of holy grail of positioning, because if you have the freedom to oppress, you are the boss. Religious liberty is 9 times out of 10 merely newspeak for the freedom to oppress. Catholics insist on it. And if the Republicans have their way, everyone will have the freedom to oppress the LGBTQ community simply because of their sexuality. And the fact is, it's none of any of y'all's dang business who or what arouses me or what gender I identify as. That part of my freedom will never come up against your freedom. That part of democracy is simply called respect. The only freedom you lose is the freedom to oppress, which, folks, how can that even exist in a supposedly free country? This upcoming election cycle is possibly the most important in our history. On the one hand, you have a party that does at least believe in democracy and that just might be convinced to take some climate change action. And on the other side, don't care about democracy, have the freedom to oppress, and we'll just deregulate and make that money. They don't even recognize the existence of climate change, much less respect it as an existential threat. So, I propose a few litmus questions for your candidates, and note, they are not about climate change. One, does this person believe in democracy? Election denial is a lot more than sore losership, folks. It breaks the system. If you believe in democracy, when you lose the election, you concede, you try again next round. Clearly, we need more civics in our education system. Two, does this person respect your freedom? Or the flip side of the same question, does this person think they have the power to tell you or anybody else what to do? Three, does this person respect truth? Can you trust a person who lies? Four, does this person exhibit compassion? Remember, it is a nuke. You get four no's here, you got a solid member of the greed, cruelty, and ugliness team. And yes, I also call them the making money justifies enslavement team and the freedom to make money team. And so it's really up to y'all, you know, whether or not you're going to let the making money justifies enslavement team win here. Do you want constructive action? Do you want to change how we live so that we do no harm and give our descendants a chance at life? Or do you want to just keep going? Well, if you're hoodwinked by a destructor, of course you do, because of course then our descendants are going to fade away into the heat. Well, if you seek constructive action, then you have to evaluate who you are electing, who you are going to support, based on whether or not they are engaged in constructive activities. If they are denying democracy or fomenting division, cheating the system, disenfranchising people, or advocating violence, all of those activities are destructive in a big way. They ride old and proud, destructive energy streams, and they can stop whatever constructive energy streams we can get going dead in their tracks. But we can do this within the system without violence, with compassion. Look for constructive action. Then go out and vote. If we could get every single trench dweller to the polls, the Making Money Justifies Enslavement team is going to be out of there. And I'll tell you, folks, if we do not vote them out, the simple fact is that they will not take climate change seriously at all. They will attempt to make money on it, and they will end up bunkering their descendants underground until they just fade away because the surface of the planet will cook humans. So in times like these, with liars behaving badly, taking so much control over such a large portion of the populace, it helps to remember the special skill of the destructor, the ability to hoodwink. But it also helps to remember the power of your own belief, because that is what the destructor wants, the power of your belief. If enough people believe instead that we can change this doomsday machine into a balance restorer, then by golly, folks, we can do it. I have to refer you to Season 2, Episode 3 for a full discussion of the power of belief supported by committed personal energy, but it is immense. And the most important point is that as people join their beliefs together, that immense power grows exponentially, the sum way greater than the individual parts. And what we need now is to send a wave of constructive energy emanating throughout the land. Do you believe it's possible? Your answer to that question could decide the future of humanity. Clearly, I believe it's possible. I just gave you a dang plan for how to do it. Now, did I succeed in making it make sense? What do you think? Are we going to give it a shot? Are we going to drive this baby off the cliff? If you think maybe give it a shot, then please consider forwarding this, because numbers are what we need now. Well, I had it in my head that this would be the last episode of Season 2, but I can clearly see the need to explore each of these action steps further, to break them down in more detail, answer more questions, clear up misconceptions like, you know, everything will fall apart without a free market. You know, other considerations like Social Security, which we secure, and health insurance, which goes single payer, of course. So an action step addendum will almost certainly be coming to a podcast near you in the not too distant future. In the meantime, please do what you can to contribute to constructive streams of energy and to reduce your contribution to destructive energy streams. This is an old guy who knows shit, signing off till next time.